the prosperity gospel, godliness, Islam, abortion, religious truth claims, scientism, the centrality of justification. You can meet and hear some of your favorite guests teach on these topics at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
You just can't beat Oprah with these pesky little things called facts. Facts don't work for the Oprah audience. Story works.
I know the future. The prophetic words given in Scripture are very comforting. And I don't need these modern day prophets. I have the apostles and prophets that wrote the stuff down in Scripture.
Faith is still believing that God will make good on his promises because he has in the past and he is a faithful God.
Confessional Lutheran deadheads love Issues Etc.
There is no doubt that it is a intensely political issue. It is a public issue. There's a difference between those two, but it is also a personal issue. The issue of abortion is, in a lot of ways, a political divide, a public divide in the United States. There's no doubt about that. It's also a personal divide, and maybe we've talked to so many people here on Issues Etc. who've talked about changing hearts and minds. The laws need to be passed. The regulations need to be put in place. But hearts and minds also need to be changed. How does that happen? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon, the 25th of January. We're going to be talking about abortion as a political, public, and personal issue. Terry Mattingly will be our guest for the first half hour. It will be part three of our multi-part series on progressive versus classical Lutheran education. Today, we're going to talk about socialization or formation. Dr. Thomas Korchak of Concordia University Chicago will be our guest. Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, will be our guest. They were the first tweet I saw yesterday, early in the day, about the story that Cecile Richards will reportedly be stepping down from leading Planned Parenthood. A lot of them are connecting them with the number of abortions that were performed under her leadership, topping 3 million. We'll talk about her legacy with Marjorie Dannenfelser. Nicole King will join us to talk about Rachel Denhollander's impact statement at the trial of Larry Nassar. It was remarkable in many ways. We'll find out how. And then Dr. Andrew Lewis will explain what he meant in a New York Times op-ed piece, how the pro-life movement has promoted liberal values in the last few minutes of Issues Etc. You can join us with questions or comments. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about abortion as a political, public, and personal issue, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
You have written recently about some evangelicals that are not so much in the news nowadays, although you say they are a huge part of the kind of evangelical establishment, so to speak. Who are you talking about? Who are these?
Well, it's a really interesting meeting that's been going on for 3 years now, and it's held every year in conjunction with the March for Life in Washington, D.C. And of course, when you're dealing with March for Life, you're dealing with kind of one of the signature events of cultural conservatism, broadly defined. It's certainly bigger than evangelicalism, and I would argue that it's bigger than the Republican Party, in part because you have the participation of lots of African Americans, Latinos and Roman Catholics and others, along with small groups that show up, such as Atheists for Life and Gays and Lesbians for Life and others. But anyone would have to say the March for Life is one of the biggest events of the year, in the world that would include evangelicals among conservative religious believers. So the fact that this event is called Evangelicals for Life is kind of an interesting phrase. A couple of decades ago, a controversial conservative Roman Catholic priest started an organization called Priests for Life, which raised the question like, okay, who else is there, you know? What's the opposite of a priest for life? Well, some people would say the same thing about evangelicals, but I don't think that's particularly true at all right now. But anyway, Evangelicals for Life is hosted by the public policy wing, the Ethics and Religious Policy Department of the Southern Baptist Convention, which remains the largest non-Catholic flock in American life. And the other organization that's hosting it is an organization that used to be in the news a lot more than it is now, but is still terribly important, in my opinion, and that would be Focus on the Family, a group that has kind of moved further out of politics, but is still dealing, you know, with a lot of the same issues. So when you're dealing with the Southern Baptist Convention meets Focus on the Family, and you're in Washington, meet coinciding with the March for Life, and you have some prominent people coming over from Capitol Hill to be numbered among the speakers, that would probably fit anyone's definition of a significant event among religious conservatives. Yet, I wrote my column about it this year because, once again, it drew little or no press coverage.
Coming out of this meeting, what is the push, the call, the invitation for common ground? What does that mean? What is that supposed to look like?
Well, I think the main thing is that speech after speech at this convention dealt with the issue of abortion while never denying its political overtones and while never denying the importance of debates at the Supreme Court and whatever else. This event did not look at abortion strictly through a political lens. And so the minute you start talking about, well, what can churches do related to abortion, you immediately get into a wider range of issues which immediately link up with ministry, quite frankly. And the most obvious of these would be alternatives to abortion care. Crisis pregnancy centers leap to mind immediately. But at the same time, you would have to say that efforts to get churches to be more active in foster care and in adoptive programs and in the parts of the city where abortion is most intense, if you're really going to try to help women have options other than abortion, you have no choice but getting involved in some of the details of poverty. Frankly, emigration is going to come up immediately, and a host of other issues. And I think this brings up one of the most important points that a lot of people never stop and think about it. I hear about it all the time when I've written several columns over the decades about an organization called Democrats for Life. And a lot of people say, you know, Democrats for Life, that's just totally irrelevant. Well, the point I would make is, how would America put a dent in our current abortion law regime without some efforts that were not in some serious sense bipartisan? I mean, the Republican Party's divided on abortion between kind of the country club libertarian and bankers wing and the more socially conservative elements of the party. The old Bill Buckley or Ronald Reagan tent included lots of people who, for various reasons, were not opposed to legalized abortion. So to say that you're going to wait for the Republican Party to bring in a new age on this issue all by themselves, quite frankly, is ridiculous. At some point, there will have to be bipartisan efforts to even talk about having abortion laws in America that resemble those in Europe or in other parts of the world where abortion can't take place after 20 weeks of pregnancy. Or, you know, there's, as everyone keeps quoting now, I mean, even Trump did the other day, and I put it in the column I wrote this week about even the Evangelicals for Life conference. There are only 4 countries in the world that allow abortion after 25 weeks. And 25 weeks is getting quite close, especially with modern science, to the viability stage in the original Roe versus Wade framework. Those 4 countries are China, Vietnam, North Korea, and the United States. Now, when you hear those 4 countries, which one doesn't fit? You know, if you're looking at kind of how they view life and culture. Yet, America's laws have almost no compromise built into them at all. And this conference was interesting because it was, you know, when you say common ground, they're not just saying common ground on a Supreme Court decision. That may be a long time coming, depending on what chairs open up when at the U.S. Supreme Court. But even if the court changed, and even if the court put this back into the hands of states, at some point, there's going to need to be middle ground, compromise, center culture change on a lot of these other issues. And that's what this conference was about.
Why so little or perhaps no press coverage of something that, I mean, you said it's a regular event and it's a big deal.
Now, I wasn't able to attend the conference, but they live streamed it and the video is online. That would be interesting to see if we could get a link up to some of the video for this. We can look that up online. So I didn't watch every single presentation, but I suspect that one of the main reasons this didn't draw a lot of coverage is that most of the cultural conservatives who were at this event are not supporters of Donald Trump. And in fact, several of them are prominent never-Trumpers or people who have wrestled with Trump at every single stage of the campaign and even afterwards. And so the fact that this event didn't frame these questions in terms of the actions, public persona, and private life of Donald Trump, sadly, made it less newsworthy. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, right now, Trump has to be in every headline. And if the word evangelical is going to be in a headline, then you know Donald Trump has to be in the headline, which meant that coming to this a mainstream media organization, especially television, I would think, if they came to this conference, the news angle they would probably cover is that nobody was talking about Trump. And that's kind of a Zen thing, isn't it? I mean, if nobody's talking about Trump, then it's a huge story that nobody's talking about Trump, which is a huge story because they should be talking about Trump because they're evangelicals. So how do we then deal with the fact that these are a bunch of evangelicals who are all here talking about these issues, and they're not talking about Trump? And in fact, several of them are people that are very highly publicly identified as being critics of Donald Trump. So are these evangelicals or not? Are these Christian conservatives or not? Don't we know that all Christian conservatives support Donald Trump? You know, and burn incense at his altar every night? So this event didn't fit. But if you watched the presentations, there was actually a lot of very interesting information in this event.
We'll talk more about it on the other side of the break. Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Thursday afternoon. We're talking about abortion as a political, public, and personal issue. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate.
Look. Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
You can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff, Hans Feeney, Scott Klusendorf, Craig Parton, Will Wheaton, Angus Manoogian, and Jonathan Fisk at the 2018 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Oh, morning star, of morning star, shine with bright across the light of
glory. Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about abortion as a political, public, and personal issue. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and of the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. So, Terry, you were talking about this conference that took place there in conjunction with the March for Life, and they're putting that emphasis on kind of finding common ground. If I would have gone kind of a representative sample, obviously what you said, what interested the new or disinterested the media was the fact that they weren't talking about Trump all the time in some sense. What were they talking about?
Well, I've run through some of the things there, but there was a lot of emphasis on what these issues look like at the personal and the congregational level. In other words, the point was, what could people in your pews actually do to help folks? Now, that makes me immediately think of a book from several decades ago by my dear friend and for years the wife of my priest in the Baltimore area, Frederica Matthews Green. Her very first book was called Real Choices, and in it she traveled all over America and talked to women who had had abortions and basically said, what could your family, what could your church have done to have helped you avoid having an abortion? And it was the details that come out of that are all just very practical. And I mean, it's of course it's money and it's jobs and it's support, and in some cases it might be protection from a man who wants them to have the abortion. Sometimes it might be changing the minds of some members of their family. But these things were all personal. In other words, these are the kinds of issues that you can't go to Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. and pass a bill that's going to solve these problems that are often related to personal behavior, personal moral decisions, feelings of abandonment, and a lot of other things. So this conference included a lot of sessions talking about that. Now, there were sessions about what's ahead at the level of the Supreme Court, you know, what kinds of actions we might see. But this was not a political pep rally in which basically folks were being whipped into shape to get ready to go out and vote in the kingdom. There was kind of like a realization that ultimately, no matter what happens to the court, no matter what happens in American politics, churches are going to have to do things that make lives different for Down syndrome children, people seeking adoptions, the foster care system in America. These were the kinds of things they were talking about.
I'm going to be talking a little bit later this afternoon with Dr. Andrew Lewis. He's written a New York Times op-ed piece, How the Pro-Life Movement Has Promoted Liberal Values. And by that, he means kind of First Amendment values. They weren't as warm as they could have been in the 70s toward it. And then they've kind of begun to view the pro-life movement in a more broad human rights sense. Is that a way, in your opinion, that the kind of the hearts and minds, maybe even written a little larger than sitting down having coffee with someone, but maybe the arguments can be persuasive for the pro-life movement on the in the public square?
Well, I mean, let me stress something. I've had friends who have been involved in public dialogues and private dialogues on these issues, like, for decades. And most of them would say, you're not going to have a dialogue between Planned Parenthood and Focus on the Family that's probably going to make a lot of progress. In other words, there have been a lot of common ground efforts that have basically taken organized groups of people who are in favor of abortion rights and organized groups of people who are opposed to abortion rights, sit them down at the table and see if they can come to understand each other's points of view. I mean, quite frankly, a lot of folks there at the activist level, at the leadership level, their minds are pretty made up. And most of them are probably not the folks who would want to talk about compromise on a lot of these issues. This conference, again, stressed everything, or most everything, through the eyes of ministry, which is when people need help or when you're in situations where you can talk to people one-on-one, or when things happen within your family, or when things happen among your friends, and you find out that someone's in a crisis, at that point, how do you talk about these things? What's in people's minds that might move them off the spot where they seem to be locked down? The column I wrote focused on one of the things that quite frankly, has evolved a lot through the years. And that's the issue of, when does life begin? Now, that's an issue that involves, obviously, law. It involves science. It involves theology. It involves a lot of things. But anyone would have to admit, as at one point Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska said, we are a couple of years away from ultrasound technology the size of an iPhone that is going to allow people to see the unborn, or things that snap into your iPhone and allow you to do ultrasounds or to see, you know, how a baby's progressing at that point. In a culture that is increasingly experiential and visual, it's hard to overemphasize how much that kind of scientific or technological progress or change would affect ordinary people. Years ago, Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, in a decision about related to Roe and to abortion, she said that Roe v. Wade is on a collision course with itself. And what she meant was that science keeps moving the ball on the issue of viability. And just from that viewpoint alone, the abortion science issues today are radically different than they were 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. I mean, there are children alive and well today who were born at 23, 24 weeks, you know, into a pregnancy. There are some younger than that. And who knows what science is just around the corner. So there were issues like that talked about at this conference. And over, I guess the stress was, even if it was not stated publicly, even if it was in the silence, the big theme here was evangelicals and other conservative Christians need to articulate what they believe about abortion at the level of human beings, not at the level of political fundraising letters. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I got one more question for you. You sat back and watched and saw the media coverage of the March for Life. How would you, kind of your journalist's eye, evaluate how it was covered?
Well, it was a pretty typical year, with one exception. You did have a lengthy story in the Washington Post, which looked at the diversity within the March for Life, and of course you know this is coming, in terms of their attitudes toward Trump. And while you might say, well, that's Trump again, hey, at least it demonstrated that within this broad social movement called the pro-life movement, there is political diversity. Now, there were some details in that story that I heard from a lot of readers about that were quite upset about. That's neither here nor there. At least the main Washington Post story was a valid, newsworthy, complex look at this issue. There was also a story at Religion News Service that looked at this year's march kind of through the eyes of Democrats for Life. And I would see that as progress as well. If you were looking at this, if the goal was to present a more nuanced look. Now, frankly, I don't watch a lot of television news anymore, so I don't know if anything got onto the major channels in terms of extended coverage. I would be interested in terms of hearing from people about that. But my reading is that this was a pretty ordinary year when you then consider that for the first time a president spoke to the march, even if not live at the march, it was a live video hookup from the Rose Garden. So once again, maybe it's amazing that we got any coverage at all that wasn't Trump, 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 and Trump when Trump actually did speak to the marchers, which gives that obviously a pretty strong news hook in and of itself.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Thomas Korchak. You've probably heard it. I want my kid to be happy. I want him to be happy in school. If he's not happy in school, something's wrong. Maybe with him, maybe with his teacher, maybe with the whole school. They are there, after all, to teach my kid to be, what, an upright citizen, to socialize him? Is there a better way than socialization as a goal for educating our children? Maybe something like formation. What's the difference? We'll find out right after this as we continue our series on classical education versus progressive education with Dr. Thomas Korchak.
In just a few short years, digital technology has revolutionized the way we live, work, and interact. But what does this mean for the church? In its January issue, the Lutheran Witness magazine looks at digital technology through Lutheran eyes, examining social media, online evangelism, podcasting, and the spiritual implications of these technological innovations for Christians. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Hi, this is Pastor Brian Katchelmeyer of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Over the next 5 years, Los Alamos National Laboratory is planning to hire thousands of new employees in the areas of science, engineering, security, administration, and construction. If you have both a technical and confessional mind, Los Alamos may be the place for you. I invite you to explore the possibilities on the websites for the Town, Laboratory, and Redeemer Lutheran Church.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night, you're thinking about it, my experience with it is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.